All right, welcome to the Ambition Audio Show. We are coming live from a Zoom call between Brooklyn and the west coast of Florida. I have my man Daniel Barrero Jr. on the podcast. How you doing, Dan?
Great, great. Doing good. Good today. Last day of the new year. Actually, this will be my last podcast interview.
Last podcast of 2020. Let's end it strong. We're all really lucky to have Dan on the podcast. He's a hyper entrepreneur in the real estate space. He's the owner of USA Land Ventures. He's also an investment coach. He boasts a really big following on social media. He's collabed with some of the biggest guys on YouTube and things like that. So we're really lucky to have him, someone who's a real value add teacher. So Dan, let's just start it off strong. You know, who are you and how'd you get started in real estate?
I'm Dan Barrero. I mean, I got started back in 1989. There was no real plan other than that I wanted to invest, right?
Yeah.
We didn't have this platform that we currently have today. If we had, I wouldn't have made as many mistakes as I did. and back then, you know, most real estate investors back then kept their cards close to their chest, right? They kept everything a secret. They didn't want to share anything. So it was like basically a learn as you go. I bought my first property in 1989 in Fort Greene, Brooklyn. I paid $72,000 for it. It was a two-family pre-war construction. To this day, I still own it.
Nice.
That's one property I'll never get rid of, although I really don't sell anything in New York. Rarely do I do, unless it's not performing as well as I expected it to.
Yeah.
But other than that, that's pretty much how I started.
Nice. So you started, so you're from Brooklyn. Where in Brooklyn are you from?
I actually grew up in Fort Greene.
Oh, there you go.
Yeah. So I was living there when it wasn't as nice as it is today. Right. I got to tell you, me living there, I didn't know it wasn't nice. Does that make sense? I don't know if that makes sense. It was just normal.
Yeah. Because you probably felt a good sense of community. You know, you play baseball with the guys. It was all good, you know?
Exactly. So
yeah.
You know, it was all, and you know, my grandmother used to say, tell me who you hang out with and I'll tell you who you are, right?
So
I made sure I was always with the better kids. Well, not the better kids, but the kids who had more guidance from home, right? You know, as far
Absolutely.
As how to behave. So I didn't get into any trouble, but I knew a lot of kids that did. But I, you know, after I went away to college and I came back and I got a job, you know, I hated my job. I knew I wanted to do something else. There was an empty store that actually my dad had owned a grocery store on a corner of Park Avenue at Delphi. And he had a huge deli business. And what I used to go there and help him after work. And he sees me really miserable one day and he says, what's wrong? And I said, tell him I hate this job. You know, did you save enough money yet? And I said, of course I'm saving. I was literally saving 70% of what I was making per week.
Good for
I
you.
Was living way below my means. Right. He says, well, then why don't you take that store across the street? That's empty. So there was a store that was empty. No matter what business went in there for like 15 years, went out of business.
Wow. Oh, it was one of those dead locations. Yeah.
Totally dead. And I did, I went in the next day, I quit my job and I opened up a video store and
wow,
I was there literally for 25 years. About 5 years later, my brother David joined me. And that video store, grew into a beeper business that we had well over 100,000 beeper subscribers. Not sure if your audience is old enough to even know what beepers are. And then that grew into a cell phone business. And then from there, we also owned it. We purchased and operated two laundromats. That was our main hub as an.
How was the laundromats? I see a lot of people getting into that. It looks like it looks like you can't make money, but then I see them collecting.
Oh my God! It's like every other business, right? As long as you're willing to work the business and attend the business, you'll make money. It is a cash business. It's a great business. It all depends on the location. It's a very hefty amount acquisition cost to get into, but it pays itself. And then we also had ATM machines that we were putting up into different.
I thought about doing that. How'd that work out?
Oh my God. It was like loan sharking. It was unbelievable. But you know, every business has its time and its moment, and those businesses had its times and its moment. And when I saw the writing on the wall, I was out, right? Cause I wasn't going to continue to work as hard as I was working for less money or less market share. Because then you take that same time and energy and you can put it into another business and those, you know, for opportunity costs. So, you know, eventually we at all while we were accumulating properties in Brooklyn between Park Slope and Fort Greene. So, you know,
you're giving me the chills right now. So you were buying up Park Slope in the 80s.
Yeah, yeah. Actually, no, I started in Park Slope in 1990.
1990, okay. Still.
Yeah. So once we had enough properties, we literally sold off all the retail stores and went strictly into real estate. And that's what we've been doing since.
Okay, so you sold all the businesses and you started to get into real estate full time.
No, we were already into real estate. While we were generating money through the business, we were taking up our profits. We were living below our means and buying property. We were buying property with 30, 35% down, sometimes 40% down, and then renovating those properties with our own money, right?
And then would you refi them once you renovated it?
Yeah, we would refi them, take our original investment out, or at least most of it. We always kept at least 35 to 45% equity. I never refinanced more than 65%. And I wanted that cushion in the event that if there was a downturn, even if the rents went down, the property could still sustain itself without having to acquire any money out of our personal pockets.
Absolutely, yeah. And those rents did not go down, I'm assuming.
No. We were fortunate in that sense. But, you know, it's funny because I was just listening to quote-unquote a real estate guru, and he was talking about on Instagram and how he's used this new system. And, you know, the last 3 years he's made so much money. And I'm like, oh, what's his system? And then he calls it the Burr system, right? And I'm like, you know, that system, I was doing that when there wasn't a name for it.
Yeah. Oh, so you must have been – I think I have an idea of what you were listening to. The whole Burr thing is huge right now.
Yeah, and it's a recycled idea, and it's a great idea. It just annoys me how they make it sound as if it's a new innovation, right? You know, listen, this business is a very simple business. I tell people, keep it simple. You know, I tell people if you're extremely intelligent, don't get into it because you oversimplify it. You know, this. This is a very simple business. Don't make it bigger than what it is. Use some common sense. And as long as you're willing to work harder and think outside the box, you'll make money.
Love it. I love that. So, yeah. So let's segue from that. So you have a first time investor. Like, I'm in the market right now for my first duplex. I'm working on that short sale right now. So you're in the market for your first time. What do you recommend for investors going in? Just keep it simple.
Keep it simple. Get advice or mentorship from people that actually are doing it, not somebody who's done. You know, I see people online, and I'm not saying anything bad about them or whether they're giving bad advice. I won't give the bad stuff. But, you know, they did 10 deals, and all of a sudden they're professionals. I'm sorry, you're not a professional after 10 deals. Even after 5 years, I mean, you're going to have some knowledge, you're going to have more experience than the person who's just starting, of course, but you haven't experienced, you know, those different, there's multiple types of bad tenants. There's multiple types of personalities you shouldn't rent to. There's multiple ways to avoid those personalities and those bad tenants. There's multiple ways to negotiate a contract on the buying side, on the selling side, on the negotiation of your contractors, even the price of material. So surround yourself with individuals that have actually done it, but are currently doing it as well.
Gotcha. Okay. Is there any specific type of asset that you find, you know, most profitable? Like, I'm looking for a duplex because it's just practical for me right now. Like, if you were somebody who's, like, I had a question, this is for Paul K from TKE. He was asking about, so he's just got a job. Like, he was doing what you're doing. Like, he was he's not working for himself, but he's got a job. He's got some extra money. Like, and he lives in Nassau County, Long Island. What kind of asset should he be looking for real estate wise?
So it all depends, right? That's an open-end question, right? Because what I'm going to say to you is, are you looking for, like in your situation, are you looking for a duplex because you look at the house hack, or are you looking to actually just rent both apartments, right?
Great question.
That's it all depends on the individual and what the actual goal is. So what would be your goal, for instance?
Thanks for asking. My goal would be to house hack.
Right.
That's exactly what I'm doing. I'd be house hacking my first property. You know, I'd be living on the first floor or even in the basement, because I'm not scared to scrap and live below my means. So I would be house hacking. And that's what I told the guy, Paul. I'm doing a deal with my buddy from college, and he's doing the same thing, house hack.
So I would tell you, if it's a two family, great. I wouldn't live in the basement if it's an illegal basement. I've seen so many guys get their shirts handed to them when they do that.
Really?
The extra money truly is not worth it. So I'm totally against doing anything that's illegal as far as that type of stuff. However, I love it, and I'll tell you why. The tax benefits are incredible.
Okay.
In addition, when you sell the property, because it was actually your personal property, you get an additional amount, and you would need to speak to your accountant. I'm not too sure about a two-family, but if it was a one-family you were house hacking, it's $250,000 of profit that you wouldn't have to pay for on the first
two.
Now, is that, I'm not sure about a two-family, but I'm sure because you do live there, there is a percentage of that you end up get to keep that's not taxable as far as capital gains is concerned.
Ah.
Right. In addition to that, you want to get into something where you're going to have the tenant pay the majority of your mortgage, if not all of it.
Mm-hmm.
And you'll be living there for free. And again, live below your means. So, you know, it's funny. My wife and I, so my wife was my first, when I started my video store, I worked there for 3 years by myself from 9 a.m. till 10:30 at night.
And it was, I believe it.
After work, she would come and help me, who was my girlfriend at the time. And, you know, we were fortunate that we were both willing to do and sacrifice for the long term, right? So, yeah, we were both making good money, but we never, you know, I didn't get to drive a nice car until I was like maybe, I don't know, 40 years old.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. So not because I couldn't afford it, but because it wasn't in the plan, right? I would look at that car and I say, man, I'm going to go spend $50,000 on something that's not going to make me money. It doesn't make sense. So I would take that money and buy a condo, let's say in Florida, that's making me tons of money. I'm at, like, you know, stuff that I bought in, let's say in 2012, has increased in value, not by 5 or 10 or 20 times, by like 300%. And it's given me 40% return on my original investment. So, you know, that's why I never purchased a nice car. So I would tell you, if it's house hacking, I love it, especially if you're starting off. Remember that you live in there, so be extremely diligent with who you pick as a tenant, because you know, that's, you don't want to lessen your quality of life. You're willing to live below your means, but that doesn't mean you should lessen the quality of your life.
Gotcha. You're getting me fired up. I could ask you like 10 questions right now, but I want to jump right into Florida while I got it.
Okay.
So you made a lot of money in Florida. I'm in Florida right now. I bought a $38 round trip ticket down here.
I believe it.
So I could spend a weekend down here. Like, I could come on vacation for a weekend here right now and save money and shop for properties.
Yep.
Tell me about your dealings with Florida. How'd that work? And shout out to Alex Winarski on asking the questions of investing out of state. Here you go.
So it took me a really long time to get out of my comfort zone.
And I got my notepad out right now, by the way. I'm hyped up about this.
I'm not going to lie to you. I made a lot of mistakes. And the biggest mistake was getting the courage, or acquiring the courage to get out of my comfort zone. So, you know, I started investing in Florida. It was kind of a fluke. I purchased these two lots across the street from my store because they kept dumping on them. And they were dumping restaurant food on it at night, and the smell coming across the street. Remember, this is in the 80s, this 90s, early 90s, before Giuliani's administration. Jenkins was in office. The city was really not what it is today. You know, it's something you would see in the movies, right? Mm-hmm. So I actually purchased, it was with my father's insistence to purchase those two lots just so that we could fence them and clean them so that we don't have to deal with the smell and the garbage across the street. I ended up selling those two lots. I bought it for less than 70,000. And we ended up selling them for 6 months later to a developer for $160,000.
Bang.
So that was the first time we did a 1031 exchange. Took that money.
There you go.
Yeah, bought two more buildable lots across the street from that on the opposite side of the street, because it was a corner, right? And within a year, sold that for $350,000.
Wow.
Again, with a 1031 exchange.
For the listening audience, what's a 1031 exchange?
So essentially, you're taking the funds.
You're taking the profits from the sale and dumping it into equity of a new property.
You got to take the entire amount, not just the profits, but the principal amount as well.
Gotcha.
You give it to a trustee that's guiding that 1031 exchange. You have a certain amount of time to identify a new property and a certain amount of time to purchase that property. So gotcha. We took and as a result of that, you don't have to pay the capital gain taxes on it, correct?
Correct.
So we then sold that property for, I think, $350,000, bought the ones around the corner. We kept $235,000. But in the interim, we were the profits monies, we were dividing them. So I was taking that money and I ended up buying like three more properties with that, not just the two lots around the corner. We bought those for $235,000. And 5 or 6 years later, we sold that for $1.6 million. It was a bonanza. And so when we were selling these lots and literally all we did was clean them, rock them, fence them. And then in the interim, I was using them as parking lots to park cars, and people in the neighborhood would come to my video store and pay me $150, my brother and I, $150 to park their cars there per month, right? So wow. That's the best business, I got to tell you the truth, because you're not worried about, you know, heat, electric, roof, any of that. You just basically
just land.
Car, that's it. Yeah. So my brother-in-law from Florida kept telling me about a place in Cape Coral. And after about 2 years of him keep, you know, buzzing this in my ear, my dad and I took a trip out there. We bought lots for $3,000 in the middle of nowhere. There was nothing there. Nothing.
Come on.
No.
Cape Coral is where exactly in Florida? I'm a little new to this area.
It's Lee County. You fly into Fort Myers, right across. It's literally the main city for Lee County is Fort Myers.
Oh yeah, I was in Fort Myers last night.
Yeah. So I bought these lots for $3,000. 6 months later, we did another deal. I had some extra money. My brother and my dad said, you know what? Why don't you go buy more lots? And I said, yeah, why don't we do that? I went out there and same realtor, she's driving me around, Lucy Quinones, and this woman taught me so much about the land business and about the real estate business, how to find your next area that you should be investing in. This woman was phenomenal in teaching me those things. To this day, I still use what she taught me.
I'd love to grab her number. Maybe I could do a tour while I'm down here.
I actually just did. Yeah, do that. I'll give you that when we're done. She was kind enough to come on as a guest on my mentorship class that we do every Wednesday for free.
Oh, I love
it. She was one of the guests. I'm going to be posting that one up on YouTube soon. But she tells me, you know, there's nothing for $3,000 and $6,000 now. And I'm like, how is this possible? In less than 6 months, it goes up double. And then she educated me some more and we ended up buying some more. And it turns out I ended up buying a couple more lots for my kids under my daughter's names.
Nice.
They were very young. And those lots paid for their college, believe it or not.
Wow, it's giving me the chills, man. Yeah. That's incredible.
Yeah, so that's how I got into to Florida business. It was totally accidental. It wasn't accidental, but it was with a lot of push from my brother-in-law. And then we started, when I turned around and sold those lots 2 years later, 3 years later for $30,000, starting to sell. I had accumulated a lot more for 2 years, and then I was selling them for $30,000. Then when they all went up to $50,000, I was like, dump them. Because it didn't make sense to me. It was more about the hype, in my opinion. There was no real foundation. And I was afraid, you know, that when the music stopped, I was going to be left without a chair. So
yeah.
we took those funds and we started buying in the northern part of the state where the land was cheaper. And we found that there was, believe it or not, using eBay and placing ads like in the Penny Savers, we were selling land to out-of-state investors as well as in-state investors.
Wow.
And then that's when we started actually financing that land as well. So let's say I bought the land for $5,000 and I was selling it for 10. I would take a $5,000 deposit, and what I was really only financing was my profit money. So that land became cash flow for a 7-year note at 10 and 12% interest.
Oh my God.
Yeah.
That's crazy. And that's so attainable. I mean, I could go buy some land right now, you know?
And it's all about marketing. It's all about, you know, it's basically the same lot, right? It's all, how did you market that differently? So what I tell people, and what I don't understand about a lot of real estate investors and real estate agents, and nothing against you or agents, but I tell people all the time, you know, when they say to me, what is it, how is it that you could sell all these condos, and how is it that you could sell all this land from New York, and we're here and we don't sell this amount? I said, one thing is because I'm willing to do what you're unwilling to do. The second thing is I'm not selling land and I'm not selling condos. I'm selling investment vehicles. You want to sell a condo. You want to sell a lot. I want to sell an investment vehicle. That's
the love it.
Yeah. So it's
absolutely
like,
love it. And by the way,
what are you selling? I'm listening.
No, I said, by the way, all this stuff in Lee County that apparently used to be farmland, I've probably driven past some of the land you bought, yep, is now all beautiful developments.
Oh, forget about it. Yeah.
You should see the development I'm in right now. I mean, they got ponds and a community pool, and it's beautiful.
Yes,
but apparently the highways aren't going to be big enough for all the stuff that they're building. I guarantee I've driven by some land that you sold the investment vehicle to a developer who made this.
I know you have, actually. It's funny. We've done both. We bought big bulk land and sell them to individual developers. I quickly learned I didn't like that side of the business. So I quickly learned, let me stick to what I like and what I know. And I was buying the individual lots. So we had people on payroll where their only job was to go out there and get us lots, and they would get $500 a lot. So we had this one woman, Suzanne Hamrick, for instance, her and her husband, they were bringing us 20, 30 deals a week, at least.
Wow.
Yeah. You know, so think about, you know, how much she was making hundreds of thousands of dollars with us on an annual basis, based on $500 a lot.
Yeah. Wow. You bought up a lot of land over here.
Oh my God. We were buying land. It was a crazy time until 2008. Then 2008, just everything, you know, I wouldn't say went down, but you know, you had to reconfigure how you were going to still stay in the business and redesign your format.
Yeah, I have a question because I won't get too personal about it, but how did you survive 2008? What did you do to innovate? How did you get through that? Because I know for a lot of families, it really hurt them bad.
So I've never believed in over leveraging. I believe in leveraging. I don't believe in over leveraging.
Gotcha.
I believe
as you didn't do in Brooklyn. You didn't, you know, you still kept that 35% equity in.
That's right. So, and I don't believe in continuously refinancing the property to go buy more property. If you're not savvy, how do I say this? I know a lot of guys in the land business, for instance, you know, when we first went into, let's say the northern part of the state of Florida, we were guppies in a very large lake, right? When by the end of 2008, we were the biggest whales, in that big lake, right?
Yeah.
So, and then, you know, there were guys out there, I'd meet up with some of these guys in the same business, and then you become friendly with your competitors and you start bouncing ideas off each other. And there's times they may have something that they can't handle. They're going to refer it back to you and vice versa. Right. So no one's losing on the deal. Everybody, you're at least getting a referral fee. Correct.
Yeah.
So all those guys went out of business. You know, they all lost their houses and they were looking at us, mm-hmm, like, you know, what is it that you guys are doing differently that you're not losing anything? Because we didn't lose one property. And we were actually, we were bored. We were still making money. We just weren't making as much, but we were still making money. Because we didn't over leverage. You know, we didn't go buy all the toys. We didn't go buy the $15,000 square foot house. You know, were we living good? Yeah, we were living good. And we, you know, so instead of going out to dinner three times a week, we went out to dinner twice a week. So instead of taking four vacations a year, you took two vacations a year, things like that. So yeah, that's how I survived, by not over leveraging.
Amazing. Not over leveraging. And, you know, it goes back to the beginning too, living below your means.
Right. Yeah.
Look, that's something I'm doing right now. I really wanted a white Mercedes convertible. I can write the whole thing off, but I didn't do it. I got the Nissan Maxima.
Yeah. You know? Good for you.
I wanted the white Benz though.
Listen, James, if I tell you what I'm driving, you probably would laugh. I'm driving a 2012 Honda Accord.
There you go. And you got more money in the bank than probably 95% or more.
I got to tell you, I hate having money in the bank. There's money in the bank. It irks me. It angers me.
That's what I was actually going to correct myself. You got more net worth than all these guys. Because once you get money in the bank, this is one of the things I agree with Grant Cardone with. Because I know, you know, you don't agree with a lot of his stuff. But he said, get that money in the bank, get it out into an investment. You know,
absolutely. Yeah, there's a lot I do agree with him with. This. What I don't agree with him is, you know, I think he personally, he preaches more about debt, and that's great if it's good debt, but not over leveraging. If I'm hoping I'm getting my point across.
No, you're getting your point across. At least with me, I'm getting what you're saying. You don't want, you know, if then, because then, I mean, the market's really good right now, and if you're over leveraged, you can get caught with your pants down.
Yeah, listen, in my experience. Everything I learned in college in reference to economics went out the window from 2008 to 2014. It's all gone. It made no sense to me, right? Because normally what happens is when interest rates are low, property value is high. When property value is low, interest rates are high, right? So it just so happens I started my real estate investment career when interest rates were high and property value was low. My first two mortgages were between 17 and 18% interest. And I'll never forget, 3-point savings bank with like 5 points. They literally raked the hell out of you, right? And you didn't have a choice, especially then because I was buying mixed-use properties. And at that time, all the investors, couple of years before, I walked away from these mixed-use properties. So to the bank, it was higher risk as well. And you didn't have a choice but to come in with a minimal 25 to 30% down payment. You know, I personally love to buy when property value is low and interest rates are high, because eventually those interest rates are going to come down, the property value is going to go up, and I have no intentions of selling anything that I buy in New York. So one of the things we were doing when we were selling that land and making all these profits with the land, I'm not going to kid you, after we paid Uncle Sam, we didn't take any money for ourselves. We took that money and reinvested it back in New York and buying more buildings. So,
love it.
You know, now we created more cash flow. So this is another thing that I laugh at, you know, when I hear these gurus talking about cash flow, as if this is a new idea. And I said, I was doing that 20, 30 years ago. You know, there wasn't a name for it back then, but.
You were ahead of the curve, man. You were ahead of the curve.
Apparently I was, but you know, I don't think so. Personally, I think this has been in existence because I also learned, I was fortunate enough to have older gentlemen teach me or that were in the business that were kind enough.
I was going to say.
Guidance. And I would watch them more than what they would more. I watched them more than that they would tell me, but the way they lived their lives and the way they invested is what I learned from. So yeah, they were doing this as well, you know, for 30 years before I started. So this is nothing new. This is a simple business. There's not much that's changed.
It was just kind of like you said. I mean, you were fortunate enough to know people, but back then there was no Meet Kevin. You know, there was, you know, so, you know, all these super wealthy landlords in New York City, they were keeping it with them and within the family, and they'd buy it all, you know?
That's right.
So that makes a lot of sense to me. So let's get back to New York. So you're taking this profits in Florida, you're living below your means, and you're dumping it into new properties in New York. How did you see, I mean, did anyone foresee the gentrification of Brooklyn happening?
You know, it's so funny. When I was preaching to my family and friends to buy property in Fort Greene, they all told me I was nuts.
Yep.
Now they tell me how lucky I am.
Yep.
I used to get angry about it, but I heard Colin Powell in an interview with Charlie Rose on Channel 13 one night, talking about his book, and there was a segment in his book, and made me buy that book, actually, where he said whenever he used to go back to his old neighborhood in Harlem, I think it was, if I remember correctly, you know, the guys that had not done as well would tell him how lucky he was, and he used to get really angry about it, right? Because he actually went to school, he actually lived below his means, he went without to achieve his accomplishments, his goals, right? So I used to get angry when people told me I was lucky. And after listening to Colin Powell, he said he finally came to peace with it because he realized that's what they used to have to say to themselves, to him, to feel better about themselves for not having done the same sacrifices.
Oh, absolutely.
Right. So yeah, to me, it was just natural. It was just obvious. It had to happen. It was sitting. You had on the other side of Atlantic Avenue, you had Park Slope that was moving up. You had South Williamsburg that was starting to move up. You had Brooklyn Heights right after the Brooklyn Bridge that was started.
Brooklyn Heights is beautiful.
Right. It's always nice. You were walking distance to any train. You were walking distance to either the Manhattan or the Brooklyn Bridge. You had the Brooklyn Navy Yard that was going through some major development to what it is today. I got really involved with community meetings, especially the community board. So I knew that Pratt Institute was implementing a lot of new securities for their students. They were starting to buy more property in the area. So if you just took the time out to get involved with community meetings, you would find out what was going on. Ratner was trying to push Metro Tech. It was just Ratner's idea. It wasn't what it is today. So, you know, there was so many moving parts that were happening. Even if just one or two of them took place, this was going to boom, right? It was just a matter of when. So that's what, and plus to me, it was really never a bad neighborhood. To others, it was. So a lot of investors were fearful of coming in. You know, they were D-class properties at that time. Now they're like higher B and A classes now. So it was a very low entry point. I was comfortable in the area. I knew most of the people in the area. I didn't have, it was in me because I grew up there. So yeah, that's why I started buying there.
Makes a lot.
I was comfortable, and two, I had done the research through community board meetings and other local community meetings to know what was happening.
Makes sense. And you seem like a guy who's still, you know, keeping it real with everybody when you go get it, you know, when you go get an Italian sandwich, you know what I mean?
Oh yeah. Listen, I walk down the street when I'm in Fort Greene and I see people from when I grew up, you know, so
yeah,
it's the only thing that bothers me is with the gentrification is that it forced a lot of people to leave, that stood there during the bad times. Right. So I had gotten involved. I actually sat on when Bloomberg was mayor, I sat on an advisory board for HUD because they took down the old brig, which was a Navy jail that the federal government gave to the city during Giuliani's time. And Giuliani made it into a city jail, but it took up one whole square block. It went from Claremont to Vanderbilt on Park Avenue down to the Brooklyn Navy Yard on Flushing. And it was an eyesore because after they abandoned it as a city jail, a lot of people would get mugged there coming up from the bus, from Flushing Avenue. It was very dark. It was always dirty. And, myself, a guy named Gary Haddam and a block association on Claremont Avenue, we were able to get, Councilman James Davis, who has since passed, involved, and Joe Lenthal, who was the assemblyman, and Marty Markowitz, who was a borough president at the time. And we were able to get Department of Corrections to donate it to the Department of HUD. They knocked it down, and now there's 435 doors there on that one block. Wow. It's beautiful. And we were able to get 30% of those doors provided for people in the community that were being, you know, forced out due to gentrification at lower rent. So
look at you.
Yeah, I was
giving back, baby. I love it.
Yeah, I loved it. A lot of investors in the neighborhood were like, what's wrong with you? You're crazy. Why are you doing this? Let's build it up. Let's make sure they go higher. And I'm like, no, this is where I, you know, grew up. I want to keep the character the same. Why should these are good people? Why should they be forced out? Right.
So absolutely.
Yeah, it was.
That's really special, man. That's really special what you did there.
Yeah, it was.
That can make you feel good about yourself too, you know?
It does. It does. We actually, it all started because they were opening up a homeless shelter for men. And our argument was we wanted the homeless shelter to be for families, and we wanted social services to be located within the homeless shelter to help these families. So we actually took the city of New York to court.
Wow.
And, you know, then they agreed to make it a homeless shelter for families. So we weren't objecting that it should not be in a homeless shelter. We were just objecting to what kind of a homeless shelter. And as a result of that, I was surprised that when I got reached out, that they reached out to me from the Department of HUD asking me to be part of this advisory board. Even though I just sued the city of New York and the Bloomberg administration, we had gotten one of the largest law firms in the city of New York to take on the case pro bono, and we did well. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. It was an interesting, tumultuous 3 years, but it was very enlightening, and learned a lot of stuff.
It sounds incredible. I mean, the listening audience right now, you are listening to an absolute Brooklyn legend right now.
I don't know about a legend, but
listen, this is not, I mean, you're going to court with the city, you know, you're on board, you know, you're really watching, you're watching real business happen.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, like there were a lot of developers, friends of mine that were like, what are you crazy? Cause I was also an advocate for downzoning from Myrtle Avenue down to the Navy Yard. Cause they were building, you know, they would go into these beautiful blocks, all pre-war construction, buy two buildings and go up 10 stories. And wouldn't even, the design wouldn't even match the character of the area, right?
Yeah.
So I was a real proponent for downzoning that. And a lot of my developer friends were like, are you nuts? And I was like,
Come on, man. No.
I said, the property value is going to go up anyway. I'm still going to make money. But, it, you know, you could come in and you could develop, but you don't have to go against the character of the area. You know, it looks hideous. You know, it's not going with the history of this neighborhood. And there's a lot of history down there. So yeah, I'm a little bit of a history buff, and maybe that's why I was so adamant on it.
Hey, they need guys like you to want to keep it all intact, you know, because I know even in places like Bed-Stuy, my dad said he was offered a building for $1 or something. I don't know the exact story.
Yes.
It was a while
ago. Yes, in the 70s.
He offered a building in Bed-Stuy, like a brownstone, for $1, which would have been worth like $2 million right now.
So you could buy them at $1. I tried to get my father to buy those. I was in high school at the time, and he was like, I want nothing to do with it. And my
Yeah.
In my father's defense, you know, it was 8 of us. He was working 7 days a week, 12-hour days. So it's not that he didn't have the foresight. It's just there was only so many hours in a day, right? Yeah, in Fort Greene, like especially between Myrtle and Willoughby, there were pre-war construction properties. You could buy them for $1. You just had to put again, I could be wrong with this, but if I remember correctly, a minimum of $10,000 of repairs within 24 months it was, or something to that effect. And you had to actually, you couldn't sell it for 5 years, I think. But that was so long ago, it's hard for me to remember exactly.
Yeah, you fixed it up, you rent it out. Yeah. So you're sitting on these community boards, you know, so you can foresee what's happening. You also grew up there. New York City, because I was, you know, I'm a forward thinker. I'm always trying to think of what's next. If you can find what's next, I want to find that here and in New York at home. You know, I live in Suffolk County now, but I really like New York City. I do love New York City. What do you see, like Mahaven in the Bronx? It's already kind of happening. Where do you see that kind of Williamsburg value increase going on around New York City?
So if I was 10 years younger, I would be going hard into the Bronx.
Hard, right?
Real hard. Really.
Yeah.
Hard. That's the last frontier in the city of New York. That's got that type of, that immense amount of landscape to do it in. Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, I would say the Bronx, and just to correct you, I didn't sit on the actual community board. I would just attend the meetings.
Okay.
Yeah, I didn't want to be part of the board. But, you know, I would tell people, get involved with the community. Walk the neighborhoods, especially in any city environment like New York City, San Francisco. I don't care, L.A. What city you're in, Baltimore.
Chicago.
I mean, it doesn't matter. Walk the neighborhood. Don't ride them. Don't drive for dollars. I mean, you could start that way driving for dollars, but you'd be surprised how much more information you get walking or going down to the corner grocery store and getting a cup of coffee, going there every morning. That deli owner, that grocery store owner knows everybody that needs money in that neighborhood. That guy there, he has more. Or go to a local barbershop. The barber, wow, more than the realtors do. The barber knows who needs money. Who passed away and whose kids don't want the property. It's a pain in the ass because they live in another state. That barber, that deli owner, that grocery store owner, they know everything that's going on in the neighborhood because people are coming in talking to them all day long.
You want to talk about, I know your show is called Golden Nuggets. You want to talk about a golden nugget right there.
Listen, I don't drink coffee. I hate coffee. But when I go into a new area, I go into the same grocery store every day to buy a cup of coffee just to give me a reason to talk to them. Because eventually they're going to know, you're going to be there every day. They start to talk to you. They start to loosen up. Just have a conversation. Say good morning. You'd be surprised how much a good morning could get you.
Oh, absolutely. Just by saying I love that. I love that. This has been an incredible podcast. I've really enjoyed this. Now, with New York City being, you know, at, you know, it was going up so hard for so long. Now it's kind of at its bottom. You know, the whole off, people are very scared of office space. Are you looking into anything in Manhattan right now while it's at a low?
Not yet.
You think it's got more of a bottom to hit?
I don't know. That's why I'm not looking yet. I mean, I shouldn't say that. I'm watching, but I'm not looking to buy yet. I don't see the numbers. So look, I'm an investor. I'm not an end user. So at the end of the day, I normally come in after renovation value. I got to be at 70%. If I'm not at 70% minimal, I don't even look at it, right? I prefer to be at 60. But because we don't know where this market's going, because we don't know what's going to be happening with the economy. And again, it's irrelevant on who had won or who wins this election, whether it be Trump or Biden. We are due for a downturn, okay? And it, and all the signs are there for it. So if when I come in now and I'm putting in offers on properties, I got to be a minimal at 60% of after renovation value because
I need
that 10 to 15% for the adjustments if it should happen. And if it doesn't happen, I'm good because I got so much property already. It doesn't matter. I'm still good, right? If I don't get emotional on it, these are my numbers and I stick to those numbers. And those numbers are based on what may be happening in the near future, as well as does it make sense at the current number?
Gotcha. Another golden nugget right there. I love it.
And don't compromise your numbers. Don't get emotional. Don't
compromise the numbers.
And don't get over anxious. So I'm not going to kid you. Like I've been getting anxious. My partner and I, who's my brother, we've both been getting anxious, you know, because when you're moving in this business, when everything's rocking and rolling, it's like a so high. Exciting. It's like
being
on a cocaine high.
I agree with that so much. Not that I'm investing, but like when deals are cracking, it's a high.
Oh my God, it's addictive. It's like,
yeah.
even though your eyes are heavy because you need to sleep, you don't want to go to sleep. You're just thinking about, let me make the next deal. How do I get the next? It's just the competition. It's just the excitement. Makes you live. It's just unbelievable.
I relate to that so much. And I think that not that I'm a super successful guy, I'm working on it, but I think that inherent passion and obsession really translate to success, you know, as far as successful people that I study and try to interact with as much as possible, you know?
Oh, without a doubt. Without a doubt.
Yeah, man. So listen, this has probably been my favorite podcast to date. Popping on, man, even though we had a little technical difficulties. Let me just ask, I had a couple questions from the listening audience. So this one's from my brother, Devin. You know, he's an insurance broker. You know, he's that guy. He's very consistent. He's a good guy. He's almost like my older brother, even though we're Irish twins.
Okay.
But he's had the consistent 9-to-5 job for a long time, and he wants to dabble in investment properties. Is there any kind of hidden costs when you buy an investment property?
It all depends, right? Surround yourself with the right people. Again, surround yourself with the right mortgage broker. There's a lot of hidden costs acquiring that mortgage. That's another reason why primarily I use my own money. My brother and I use our own money as much as we can. And then because the refinancing is a lot cheaper than actually getting the financing on a new purchase. So I would tell you, if you want to avoid those hidden costs with those mortgages, another thing that I had to finally realize, and I wish I had realized sooner, was going to family and friends for money. And then I and I it would make and what made it easier was that I realized that I wasn't asking them for a loan. I was providing them an opportunity for an investment product, right? Because they were gonna, instead of me paying the bank, I'd be paying them. But it eliminated those hidden costs on the mortgage side. It eliminated the appraisal costs. It eliminated the application fee, the underwriter costs, and all these other little things that they chime in with credit checks, that they do multiple credit checks on you during the course of the mortgage, which annoys the hell out of me. It saves all that kind of money. There's a lot of different ways, but the best way I could tell you is how to avoid those hidden costs is to educate yourself and always get at least go to 3 different mortgage brokers and ask 3 different agents their opinions.
Gotcha. Yeah. Even as a real estate agent, full-time by profession, you know, if I'm investing in like, let's say, you know, I want to connect after this and use your woman in Florida. I'm still going to run my own comps, you know?
Absolutely.
You know what I mean? It just is what it is. Yep. So last question. This is from Juan Baranacci. This kid is a hyper entrepreneur. He's my team leader. He is the one behind the scenes, you know, he's implementing the systems for long-term success. I mean, this kid is way smarter than I am, hence why I joined his team. So what's the 2020 you're investing? What's your favorite commercial asset class?
Depending. If I'm in New York City, I love mixed-use properties.
Really?
On the ground floor, yeah.
Retail in New York City.
Yeah. I love it, and I'll tell you why. Right now, and that's not for everybody. This is for, I would say, either you got to be more experienced in the business, or you have to be able to literally think outside the box. The retail space in the city of New York is going to go through a dramatic transformation. Dramatic. Now, the question is, do you want to be in that, you want to be taking part in that transformation, or do you want to watch that transformation happen and say, oh, yeah, I could have, or I wish I had? That's why I say mixed-use properties, because the apartments above are going to be giving you the carryover into that transformation takes a foothold and creates the profit margin.
Mm. Oh, I love that. You know, I started my career as a retail broker.
Is that right?
Yeah, I did my first deal on Front Street in Dumbo.
You understand 100% what I'm telling you about transformation.
Oh yeah, they gotta innovate. They gotta make it a customer experience when they go in there.
It's not only that. I personally think the larger spaces are all gonna be taken up with by the Amazons and by companies that listen. In 10 years, you're going to see, I don't know how it's going to happen. And I'm just giving this as an example, maybe, and I may not be, but you're going to see drones dropping off a toothpaste tube to you. You won't have to leave your house for anything. Like 7-Eleven, I don't personally, half of them will be gone in 10 years. Convenience stores, half of them will be gone in 10 years.
You won't. Man, I love 7-Eleven coffee.
There'll still be places like that. But you're not going to have your brick and mortar mom and pop stores like you see today, unless they're service provided. You know, you can't, you know, like for haircuts, for instance, or beauty parlors, you know, I'm actually really excited to watch this happen, to be honest with you. Oh God. Yeah. It's because it's new, it's innovative. And the people who are going to lead this innovation is your generation. That's who's going to lead it. And I'm excited to watch and learn you guys transform this entire industry. And I'm going to learn from that, and I'm going to enjoy it, and I'm going to embrace that new technology.
Oh man, I love that. So what I'm doing after I'm listening to this podcast, I'm going to shop for land in Florida, looking for mixed use in the Bronx, and I'm house hacking my crib.
Without a doubt. I mean, look, there's so much to be learned in this business, and. You know, we definitely can't do it in one podcast, but, you know, I love sharing it. And that's why I do that free mentorship class every Wednesday night.
I was going to say, I'm really grateful you did this podcast. I got a lot out of it. I really appreciate it. You helped me out tell the listening audience where to find you, how to get mentorship from you, because it goes so much deeper, obviously, like you just said.
So on Instagram, it's Daniel Barrero Jr. Or you could go danielbarrerojr.com. I should have actually put that on my title on the bottom, but I didn't.
It's okay. This podcast, by the way, is going to get on my social media. I got almost 10,000 followers. I'll give it to you. I'll tag you. On my CRM, I have a text platform. So that it's going to go out to thousands of people.
Great. Yeah. So it's
I'll plug you any way you want me to.
DanielBarreroJr.com, USALandVentures.com. So if you want to sign up for the mentorship class, just go to my website, USALandVentures or DanielBarreroJr.com. And just sign up. It takes no more than a minute. It's automatic. You'll get an invite. We don't charge anything, and because I don't have to. I'm doing this because I'm actually. I got to tell you, this year has been such a humbling experience. Although we've gone through some dramatic situations in this country, economically and health-wise with COVID, and we've lost a lot of good people, right, including many in this business. What I found most humbling is that I was able to take that time and concentrate on my social media. That's something I've always wanted to do. And the social media platforms have grown by leaps and bounds. And I can't tell you how great it is the satisfying feeling that I get when I get students that are on the mentorship class and they're asking me for my opinion on whether the properties that they're looking at should buy or not buy. But not only that, they're actually going out there and executing. You know, they're buying two family homes. They're buying three family homes. You know, they're going out and this is all over the country. And that's what I'm enjoying the most, to be honest with you, that I get to not only watch, I get to participate in their success and watch them grow as real estate investors.
That's incredible. That's incredible. I love that, man. So, the show's been great. I really appreciate you having me, or I really appreciate you coming on. Any last words?
I appreciate you taking the time out and asking me. And again, if anybody has any questions, they could just, you know, text or email or put the, you know, when you put this on YouTube, I'll also share it on my channel.
You're the man.
Yeah. So now when you tag me, I'll share it onto mine as well.
Beautiful.
All right,
Dan, I really appreciate it. And let's keep in touch.
Without a doubt.
Certainly got a customer in me.
Take care, guys. Not really, because remember, I'm not selling anything. So,
true.
But you would definitely, I will be reaching out to you, maybe buy something. For sure.
Let's go. Yeah. Hit me up. If you want to hop on a flip, I source these deals all over Suffolk.
I love it. Suffolk County is a little tough, but that's another conversation we would have. But again, let's talk, and for sure we'll be in touch. Take care, guys. If you have any questions, feel free to reach out.